Hey, good evening. Sleep With Me is proud to present Game of Drones, a Game of Thrones podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it with an episode discussion. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. We'll do the rest. The podcast is going to create a safe place where you can set aside any racing thoughts, worries, overthinking, whatever's going on in your head. We're going to get you out of that. We're going to distract you by talking about Game of Thrones. But instead of talking about the exciting, riveting parts of Game of Thrones, I want to kind of ramble on. And it's going to start out interesting, but you're going to find, as it goes on and on, you'll be less and less interested, and you'll be drifting off into dreamland. Soon you'll awake, and you'll dance through a field of wildflowers, or you'll just get up and go to work or go to school, or you'll do whatever, but you'll be well rested. That's the idea here. And yeah, I'll repeat myself once. This is a podcast meant to kind of bore you off to sleep. And we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. If you don't watch Game of Thrones, that's okay. This is still going to bore you to sleep. I'm going to talk about stuff that may or may not interest you. But you don't have to watch Game of Thrones, so I understand it. You should. You should be watching season 4 of Game of Thrones because it's excellent TV. But not necessarily a prerequisite. Not necessarily a prerequisite for this podcast. First time here, welcome. All I can ask you to do is get in bed, try it out, see if you fall asleep or it distracts you and you relaxes you or not. No pressure. If you want to find us on the web, it's www.sleepwithmepodcast.com/drones. And we have other episodes on Tuesday and Thursday nights. You find those at just sleepwithmepodcast.com. Everything we do is on iTunes. If you could review and rate us there or subscribe, I'd really appreciate that. If you need to get a hold of me, it's feedback@sleepwithmepodcast.com. If there's something you need, something you want to say, something you want to share, that's where you do it. Or you can do it on Twitter @DearestScooter. Try to post sleep news there. Or on Facebook, that's where I put bloopers from time to time when I can navigate the world of SoundCloud with their confusing thingamajigs. That's it. I hope you enjoy the podcast. I hope I help you fall asleep. This is a little quick intro. A little something new I'm trying out here. A reasonably lengthed info. Whatever I just said wasn't even in English. Intro of reasonable length just got really unreasonably long because I couldn't pronounce those. Maybe I'm having a, I don't want to say I'm having a stroke because I'm probably not. It's the way my brain works. All right, let's get on to the show. All right, tonight we're going to be talking about season 4, episode 7, I believe. Mockingbird. Mockingbird. Yeah. Dumb and Dumber. Come on. That's whenever I think of Mockingbird, I think of Dumb and Dumber. That scene. I'll post it on the show notes if you're not familiar. Dumb and Dumber is coming out soon. Looking forward to that. Or also another fine movie. National Lampoon's Vacation, the original one, not the one that plays A Christmas 50 friggin' million times, but the original one that plays all the time on cable as well. At some point, Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo, I'm having trouble with pronunciations, Beverly D'Angelo, they do a pretty rockin' version of Mockingbird. But this one, we're not talking about that, we're talking about the little pin on Peter Baelish's chest, I believe. So what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to run through the episode real quick. Then we're going to talk about Mockingbirds. We're going to talk about Cold Rolled Steel. Gratitude. We're going to talk about gratitude. Ideally, I'll come up with a song worthy of Tyrion, but I'm not sure I can do that, but we'll still talk about that. Talk about coming in through windows. Going to see, I got some comments on the Red Woman and her fine listening skills. That's not sarcasm. We'll talk about a little bit about Brienne and Hot Pie and Podrick. And what if they had a podcast or Each of them had a podcast. Hint, spoiler alert, I'll be in big trouble if Hot Pie gets his own sleep podcast. I'll pretty much be freaking screwed. But we'll comment on that. But let's run through the episode real quick, shall we? I'm laughing. I don't know why. Shall we? I don't know why I find that funny. Common courtesy is something I laugh at uncomfortably. I don't know why. On to the show. Shall we? All right, so we're going to get through this real quick. I like the old, Jamie, I made a deal for you. And then Tyrion says, for a crime I didn't commit. I don't know why. I guess I'm an A-team person. I'm talking about the TV show. So every time I hear that for a crime, I just think of the A-team. So I'll put some A-team stuff in the show. This is going to be packed show notes with YouTube videos for a crime they didn't commit or something. I don't know. The Golden Sun. Careful, I'm the last friend you've got. I liked how, I don't know, this whole Cersei Mountain thing, the way she looks at him. And Cersei this season, and in general, as I said, Cersei's the exact hateful woman no man should be attracted to. I mean, or maybe that's just Jaime's hateful words, I don't know, but she does seem kind of monstrous. But I, of course, I don't know, I'm still drawn to her, attracted to her. I mean, way, way back in, what was it? Oh, maybe it was the last season, two seasons ago, during the Battle of Blackwater, up in the, when she's making fun of Sansa. I was still like, whoa, Cersei, you've got my heart, even though she's just behaving terribly. I don't know, I just went off on a tangent, but she really gives the mountain a good look over. So I don't know what's up with that. I mean, I don't know what to say. We had a lot of philosophy, a little philosophy moment with Arya and the Hound and this dying man. And again, I can't, I wish the Roose Bolton fantasy fiction time machine applied to this podcast. Because after I saw it, I was like, is that where I got the idea for the guy? Those of you that have been listening for a while, that was like talking about me skiff. Remember that guy? Skiffy, that's what I call him, Skiffy. He was the guy in hell with the skiff to go across one of the rivers in hell. Not important, but this guy who's dying, he says, me hut. So I don't know if that's where I got the, maybe I was already doing a Game of Thrones podcast before I was doing one. But I don't know, I liked how he said, me hut. It's cute for a dying man, very cute. But then they get into the serious, deep conversation. Why go on? Habit. And then nothing could be worse than this. Maybe nothing is worse than this or something like that. And then Arya says it's nothing, kind of. She says not much. What does she say? I don't know. She says something like, yeah, you know, it's nothing, dude. Hello. Wisdom out of the mouth of babes. And I mean babe like a young child, not a babe. Dying is thirsty work. That was one of the things that in the table of contents or whatever I did, the introduction. We're going to talk about dying is thirsty work. Is it? Again, the Game of Thrones episode is nothing without its humor. Or maybe a lot of people, maybe they think, I think Cersei's a monster. Maybe you guys are like, this guy has no empathy or sense of drama. And he's only worried about, but you got fancy Bronn. I mean, holy moly. Next time, it's like they should make up a dish at Denny's or something. Can I have a side of fancy Bronn or Bronn? Bronn, right? Bronn. But that was hilarious. Just the idea of fancy. I mean, I think Stephen Wright used to say that he threw joke grenades, like he'd pull the pin and throw it, and then it would go off. And that's how I felt when Bronn came in his little fancy outfit. It's like, oh boy, this is going to be good. What's going to, I mean, when's, oh boy, it's going to be good. When's Tyrion, when's, you know, waiting. It's great. And the whole Wallace Stoneworth, he's got doe skin gloves, softer than a virgin's thighs or something. I don't need to redo that scene for you, but it was great. Oh, wait, one more line. I'm a bit short on castles at the moment. That killed me. It might kill you. You might be like, dude, I'm trying to sleep here, and you're laughing at your own laughter. Nothing more boring than that, okay? Or maybe it's not boring. Maybe it could be frustrating. Or maybe frustrating is me not getting to the next point. So I will do what you do best, and the dude takes off his clothes. It's like, whew. Again, that was another, just the way our Khaleesi was just kicking back and savoring her wine and her man meat. I wasn't even talking about whatever. Her side of fancy brawn, I guess, BRAWN. And we get a little, you know, we get a naked man, we get a naked woman, the red woman. And we'll get to the red woman scenes, but then we have Arya and the Hound again in this touching scene with the Hound talking about how he got his face burned and how, there was like so much the way he spoke about, you know, just playing with the toy and how he really did feel like this little boy. And he was even doing, the way he says, I didn't steal it, I was just playing with it. And I think he's touching his hands to his face, or he's doing something with his hands, and I was like, oh, man, Rory, whatever, Mac, you know, Rory the Hound, you're the best. Cannot give up on the gravy, folks. No gravy, no pie. Words of hot pie. I hope that's hot pie. Because he's a pie expert, I've decided he's hot pie. It might not be hot pie. Hot pie could have been one of the kids that didn't make it, but I'm calling this guy hot pie. And then Brienne's like, which would show she would not like this. What happened? The quick version. If she was listening to this podcast, I wouldn't be with you anymore. Especially if she was here while I was recording it. Brienne would not take kindly to this podcast. And then we get two more scenes, folks. One scene, another scene for the ages. Again, another episode with a scene. And this is why I want to tell stories. Is the scene with Oberyn and Tyrion. Two heavyweights with Oberyn kind of doing the talking about his first meeting with Tyrion and unveiling the freak and saying, that's no monster. And then he gives, this speech about justice and vengeance, and he says, I will be your champion. I mean, if that scene and the scene last week didn't give you, if they don't give you chills, I'm not kidding. Like, if there's an apex of this podcast, it's like that one moment when you're not bored to sleep or right before you fall asleep that I make the hairs prick up on your arms. I don't think I could do it in this way because it's not the right context or tone. But that's really what I want to do. I want to make people feel good and smile and laugh and feel lighthearted. And I also want to make people feel whatever it is I felt when he said, I will be your champion. And Tyrion's looking on. Oof, I don't know. And then we have a couple back-to-back scenes with Little Bird and our friend wearing the Mockingbird, who should be called the Mockingbird, Lord Baelish. And the bratty kid gets slapped and his mom gets, spoil alert, tossed out the moon door. Belatedly, almost, I want to say, deservedly for sure. And then you see Sansa. Oh, this was the only thing. I'm in no place to criticize Game of Thrones, but the scene with, got cut off there. I was talking about, it's the next day, 12 hours later, though to you only a few seconds have elapsed. It's the magic of podcasting. But a little something came up, so I'm here picking up where I left off. I think I was talking about Mockingbird and the Little Bird and the end of that episode and Sansa's scene with that little punk and then the mock. And I was going to, not important. So we're just going to move straight into the content. So Mockingbird, show's called Mockingbird, Baelish, Littlefinger. He's wearing a mockingbird. Is he a mockingbird? Let's look up a definition of mockingbird, shall we? Well, mockingbirds, are birds that take, like, I'm not sure, I guess I don't know what a mockingjay is from Catching Fire, Hunger Games. So I don't know if a mockingjay is real or just in that world, which name world escapes me, the name of that world. I loved those books, by the way. I read them before the movies came out. I've seen the first movie. I haven't seen the second two, but looking forward to it. Okay, mockingbirds. But besides the point, mockingbirds are a group of mockingbirds. Mockingbirds are a group of New World passerine birds from the Mimidae family. Mimidae. They're best known for the habit of mimicking the songs of other birds and insects, amphibians, and also loudly in succession. The only mockingbird in North America is the northern mockingbird, the Minimus polyglottos. The Greek word polyglottos means multiple languages. While the voyage... Oh, this was interesting. I don't think factually it speaks to the episode, but if you listen to the words without thinking too much, it's interesting when you apply it to Game of Thrones. Or I guess I'll try to do that. When the survey voyage of the HMS Beagle visited the Galapagos Islands from September to October 1835, Charles Darwin noticed the mockingbirds, Mimus thinica, differed from island to island, but were closely allied in appearance to mockingbirds in South America, mainland. Nearly a year later, when writing up his notes on his return voyage, he speculated that this, together with what he had been told about Galapagos tortoises, would undermine his doctrine of the stability of species. This was his first recorded expression of doubts about species being immutable, which led to his being convinced about the transmutation of species and hence evolution. So let me see if I understand that, because I was just thinking, I guess my initial impression was that Darwin, Game of Thrones and Darwin fit in together, but this is even more interesting, is that if I'm understanding it correctly, this together with what he'd be told about tortoises could undermine the doctrine of stability of species. This was first. I think we have the mockingbird and the tortoise to thank, the mockingbird and the tortoise to thank for evolution, which, cool. And Peter Baelish, why is he a mockingbird? Why is this episode called Mockingbird? Why is this episode called Mockingbird? I'm not sure. I'm operating on a level of intellect enough to give you a good answer for that. So I would love it if anyone's awake and loves Game of Thrones. Maybe you could just point me to discussion on a subreddit, or you could email me and tell me, well, hey, this is my theory of why. I mean, Peter Baelish definitely sings the song that people want to hear. And he's crafty. So I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into it because I don't have a good place to lead you to. But without a doubt, if you have any thoughts, make sure to hit me up, Dearest Scooter, Twitter, or feedback at Sleep With Me Podcast. I do have a little something by a man called Matt Staggs that kind of harkens back to another episode we did. And this is from the website Suvudu, SUVUDU.com. It's an article by Matt Staggs from July 7, 2011. So this is an older article. Matt Staggs says, well, I'm just going to quick read it to you, paraphrase it. Peter Baelish, portrait of a psychopath. Peter Baelish, when people talk about psychopath, first image they think of is like remorseless and unfeeling, like someone from a movie, a horror movie. A real sociopath, so this guy might be used in the more pop terms, is less sensational than the cinema counterpart. psychiatrist Harvey Checkley's groundbreaking book, The Mask of Sanity, describes a common sociopath as capable of mimicking a normal person. So there's the mimicry, disguising his lack of empathy and disregard for society's mores. I don't know if Peter Baelish does a good job of hiding his ambition, or even he's so cold. This isn't from the article, sorry. So I might disagree. I'm not sure. Again, this whole discussion's in better hands with a more intelligent person, but, and I'm not doing that to hurt myself or insult myself. It's just true. But for his research, Checkley studied institutionalized sociopaths and the common characteristics. Now, first brush, this is Metstag's, lack of remorse and shame and pathological egocentricity could be used to describe many characters of George R. R. Martin's epic. However, looking at these suspects, Cersei and Jaime, first and foremost, their actions, as cruel as they are, often motivated by empathy, Cersei for her children, and Jaime because of his love for Cersei. And they're able to have some sort of genuflection and personal growth no sociopath can achieve. Our attention must turn elsewhere. And there's no character in the series other than Viserys, Khaleesi's brother, who amplifies a sociopath better than Baelish. Baelish's ambition knows no bounds, correct? No act is beyond him, correct? Treachery and murder are par for the course. He's utterly charming. I'm not sure. He's very charming, but utterly, shows no remorse when it's come to this time to dispose of those he once called themselves his friends. And I'm not feeling this article anymore. I think we can all agree that Peter Baelish, well, I guess he mimics, I don't know. Peter Baelish is just, we've talked enough about the Littlefinger. I don't know. Maybe I'm just in a strange mood, but I don't want to beat a dead horse. And Peter Baelish is neither dead nor a horse. I don't think I want to even beat Peter Baelish up. We talked about this already. I really enjoy, that's what it comes down to, is I enjoy Aidan Gillen, and I enjoy Peter Baelish, the character, and I like being out of my comfort zone and not knowing what's going to happen when he's around, because anything could happen, anything does happen. So that's it for now on the little Baelish, little. So that's where we're going to leave it now with old Peter Baelish. All right, next up, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Hound and Arya and this guy, Mihut guy. Because he says, dying is thirsty work. You know, can you get some water? Wish it was wine. So do I. That old discussion brought up the thing, is dying thirsty work? And then it's like, of course, it's got to be thirsty work. What are the specifics? Particularly, this guy's dying from some sort of wound, a stab wound, I think, in his chest. So let's talk about it. Start with excessive thirst. Your body needs water to function properly. For example, water helps regulate your body temperature, lubricate your joints, and remove waste from your body. Adequate daily water intake is very important. Furthermore, it's important to increase your usual water intake when you are ill, exposed to hot temperatures, are engaged in physical activities. However, if your thirst is stronger than usual, it continues even after you drink, seek medical help immediately, especially if the thirst is accompanied by blurred vision and fatigue. Well, what are some causes of excessive thirst? We know one, chest wound, stomach wound. It's normal to feel thirsty after salty or spicy foods, strenuous exercise or sporting events. When it's hot, you might feel thirsty when you're suffering from illness, burns, or a significant loss of blood. Some prescription medication can also cause thirst. Frequent excessive thirst that won't be quenched can be a symptom of a serious medical condition, such as dehydration, when you don't have enough fluid, which can be life-threatening, especially for infants and young children. Dehydration can be caused by illness, sweating, too much urine output, or illness. Diabetes. Excessive thirst can be caused by hyperglycemia, high blood sugar, and is often one of the first notable symptoms of diabetes. Diabetes insipidus. With this form of diabetes, your kidneys aren't able to conserve water, leading to excessive thirst. Dipsogenic diabetes insipidus. This condition is due to a defect in the thirst mechanism, causing excessive thirst and excessive urine output. Heart, liver, or kidney failure. Psychogenic polydipsia. I think I have this. This is a psychiatric disorder, which causes people to drink too much. I've had it in more than one form. But one of my brothers called me the liquidator because I drink so much liquids of all forms. Sepsis. This is an illness caused by severe reaction to bacteria or other germs. When to seek medical attention. If you can't get to your hut, get some medical attention. This is your body's way of telling you it's low on fluids. Under normal circumstances, you should be able to quench your thirst fairly quickly. However, if your urge to drink remains constant or does not go away after you drink, it is a sign of serious health problems, especially if combined with other symptoms. Constant urge to drink could also be a psychological problem. Tell me about it. Consult with your doctor if thirst is persistent, you have blurry vision, fatigue, you're urinating more than 5 quarts a day. Hey, can we keep it to a metric system? Diagnosing excessive thirst. Let's talk about these questions. How long have you been aware of your symptoms? Are you urinating more than usual? But that's not important. You know if you're thirsty. How much fluid do you normally need? Okay, and let's dial it in for what this guy, other than being wounded, is suffering from. It's looks like he's suffering from hypovolemia, which is characterized by salt depletion and differs from dehydration, which is defined as excessive loss of body water. I thought I had a different definition of that, but. Might also mean blood volume. I thought I saw that somewhere else that meant blood volume, but causes a hypovolemia, loss of blood, internal or external bleeding, or blood donation, loss of plasma from burns. How might know about that? Loss of body sodium or intravascular water, vasodilation. Excessive sweating is not a cause of hypovolemia. So you guys that sweat a lot, don't worry about it. They need a diagnosis, but there's stages. So let's see if we can figure out what stage of hypovolemia this guy's at. Okay, stage one is like 15% blood volume loss. It's usually compensated for by the constriction of vascular bed. I think it just means your blood vessels get smaller. Blood pressure can be maintained, normal breathing, paleness of the skin, normal mental status, to slight anxiety. I don't know, that guy seemed like, okay, so next stage one. Stage two is 15 to 30% blood volume loss. His cardio output cannot be maintained, possibly. Tachycardia is 100 beats per minute. Greater than that, increased respiratory rate. He seemed to be breathing slower. Blood pressure is maintained, systolic, increased diastolic. No one took his pulse. He's pale, cold and clammy skin. Mildly anxious and restless. He's probably beyond that. Urine output of 20 to 30 milliliters. At least they use a metric system on that one. Probably not stage. Stage 3, 30 to 40%. Systolic blood pressure falls. classic signs of shock. Marked tachycardia, 120 beats a minute. Marked tachyhypnea, he's breathing faster. Alteration in mental status, anxiety, confusion, agitation, possibly. Sweating with cool, pale skin. I kind of remember him sweating. Urinary outlet, output of 20 milliliters an hour. Stage 4, that's 40% or more. Weak pulse, pronounced heavy breathing, I think. Discreased blood pressure. His blood pressure was probably down because he was, you know, not in good shape. Discreased level of consciousness. Lethargy. I think that guy had a little bit of lethargy. Dying thirsty work. Skin is sweaty, cool, and pale. No refill on your capillaries. No urine output there. Boom. There's our answer. Negligible urinary output. All right, so that guy was at stage 4 hypovolemia. But Aria took care of that real quick. Good old Aria. She learns quick, as the hound says. Or quick learner, something like that. At some point, some muckety-muck at the King's Watch said that the gates are from cold-rolled steel. And guy's an idiot, clearly, because he's talking to Jon Snow like he's half a lord. I don't know. Those guys are jerks. But what is cold rolled steel? We know what steel is. It's an alloy, carbon. Steel's an alloy of iron and another element, usually carbon. What's cold rolled steel? Of course I looked it up for you. There's actually cold and hot rolled steel. This is from MidCitySteel.com, Materials 101. Hot rolled steel versus cold rolled steel. That would be a good fight, huh? There's got to be a movie, Cold Rolled Steel, because it's stuck in my head. Hot rolled steel is a process at temperatures over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Steel products in Massachusetts can be blue-gray and rough to the touch. Hot roll steel reconfigures itself during the cool process, giving it looser tolerances than the original material when compared to cold rolled steel products. Hot rolled steel is more malleable, allowing it to be forced into a variety of different shapes. That makes hot rolled steel a good choice for manufacturing structural components such as I-beams or simple cross sections such as rail tracks. It's also used to produce sheet metal. Cold rolled steel. It's a rolling process. Oh, that's interesting. Closer to normal room temperatures. I mean, I guess at the wall, it actually is cold rolled steel, where most places would be normal rolled steel. It's not cold. Frick. Why do people think they can just use words how they want to use them? But I'm going to say that at the wall, it was actually cold rolled steel because it was. They probably did it outdoors. Even if they did it indoors, it's probably cold. But that's where you create cold rolled steel by rolling stuff at that temperature. Increases the strength of the finished product through the use of strain hardening by as much as 20%. 20% against a giant is not going to cut it. Jon Snow is right, as usual. 20%. I'm not going to, oh boy. High quality steel in Connecticut. This process in this manner has a gray finish that's smooth to the touch. Cold rolled steel, smooth to the touch. I'll tell you who else is smooth to the touch. It might be rough to the touch and gray finish. Something called a giant. Cold rolled steel creates a finished product that is more precise dimensionally than a hot rolled product because it is already closer to the finished dimension. And it has already gone through the cooling process. Unfortunately, because of these properties, cold rolled steel is limited to a few shapes, which we don't really care about, but you might. Round, square, flat. So good for gates. Finished products created by cold rolled steel include bars, strips, and rods. Cold rolled steel strips are available in a different conditions. It's half hard, full farm. Don't want to go there. Advantages and disadvantages, rural processes. When you're looking for high-quality steel in Connecticut, guess where Mid-City Steel is? Or steel products in Massachusetts, it's important to know what the materials will be used for. Why is it? Okay, it doesn't give us... So that's it. Cold-rolled steel. Oddly enough, according to this info, same complexion as a giant. So, I don't know. Let's see what happens. All right, guys. Next up, I want to talk about gratitude because Bron says to, let me look up the exact quote. Bron says something to the extent of, what can I pay with gratitude or whatever? You know, what can I use gratitude to pay for? And that kind of seems like, again, I'm not going to, Bron's a sellsword just like Tyrion. I'm not going to hate on him because he made his decisions. He made the decisions he made. And he can't, he wasn't even, to make him make any other decisions wouldn't have been fitting or like, wouldn't have been Bron. It would have been somebody else or new Bron. But, this argument about what can you pay for with gratitude seems to be a little bit of the part of the disease of this human condition that everybody suffers from in both Westeros and in the world. I mean, I suffer from it. That's what I guess I'm not going to put it on anybody else other than Bron, maybe just me and Bron, is, well, what's this, you know, gratefulness, gratitude, and I'm not, being facetious here is like, I've heard the word gratitude before and I understood its concept for a long time. And I know Oprah was big on gratitude journals for like the past 20 years. And a lot of people are into that. And I'm not sure, but it's always a mystery to me. And it's like, of course, like it was like a should. Oh, you should be thankful for all these things you have. You know, instead of making me, it was a concept that made me feel worse about myself than better. Probably because I didn't understand it. But then I reached a point in the last 6 to 8 months where I was like, I had to rethink a lot of the ways I was doing, living my life and my behaviors and how I get along with this world and realizing that a lot of the ways I do stuff wasn't working for me. And people are still telling me about this gratitude and I'm still like, I don't know. I don't get it. And honestly, this came along at the same time I'm trying to figure out what is this gratitude and thankfulness in more of a real way, not in a should way, like, oh, if you're going to practice this belief system or faith, you need to have gratitude. Or if you want to consider yourself a good person, you need to have gratitude. It's more like I'm not good at, I don't have this way of adulthood or life down because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And this gratitude, the people that do practice it, that aren't like, there are some people it seems to work for. And I've been trying to wrap my head around, and that comes up in this episode. And it's like, you know what, Bron? In another world, not Westeros, maybe you could pay for some, or I guess it made me think, can you pay for stuff in gratitude? Where can gratitude get you? I mean, and that's where you're starting to be like, okay, you're looking at it from the wrong way. And I know there's this guy, a well-known blogger in the Bay Area named Leo Babuta, I think that's how you say his name. I hope. I'm sorry, sir. Sir, I think we're probably around, I don't know how old he is, but we're probably contemporaries. And he's had a blog that I've been meaning to get around to reading called Zen Habits, I think. And so I'm going to talk about that. But the other thing about gratitude is, this is going to sound cheesy, so I hope a lot of you guys are asleep. But, you know, one of the ways I'm learning about gratitude is the thankfulness for you that are listening to this podcast and going through this process of making this podcast and having people respond to it and be encouraging and fostering my improvement and saying, you know, keep going with this. You know, this is helpful or, you know, I enjoy it. I'm thankful for that. I think I'm developing some gratitude. But so, it's an issue I'm trying to wrap my head around, and I know if I hope if you're listening, maybe this Liuba Buddha stuff I'm going to read from it will help you. Maybe it won't. But I think, I mean, in the best friend department, it's like Oberon, Tyrion, Bronn. Those are people I'd like to hang out with. So maybe there could be, maybe in another world, in a world of gratitude, four men sit around. Three used to be interesting. One was always boring. But now they sit around being thankful. And that's all they do. I don't know. I mean, that would be that's my current ignorant image of gratitude. But so let's talk about this Liuba Buddha stuff. And, you know, let's keep this going. Let's come back and talk about this again, if you're comfortable. I'm already out of my comfort zone. If you could see my face, I'm sure my pupils are dilated. And I've got a look of terror on my face because I feel like an imposter. But, you know, I'm trying. I'm trying to be gratuitous. That was totally... Oh, God. Sometimes life gives you a little joke. And it's not even on purpose. Of gratitude. I don't even know the difference in the root word gratuitous and gratitude, but or maybe they're the same word. I don't even know. But yeah, I'm going to read this Liuba Buddha stuff. We got to pause to calm down. Most of you might even think that's funny, but, you know, gratuitous nudity. That means... All right, we'll pause. Well, I'm grateful to be back again. This is the... I started this podcast 24 hours ago recording this. A little behind the scenes, I had another thing, something else come up. So yeah, 24 hours later, I'm working on the rest of this show. So my voice sounds a little bit different. It's because I don't know what percentage of the cells in my body change over 24 hours or maybe 8 or 9 hours ago, last time I was recording. But whatever, I'm here. I'm back. Behind the scenes thing is usually I record everything one shot. Sometimes something will come up where I went over time and then I had to be somewhere or whatever. I'm here, all right? And we're going to talk about Liuba Buddha. Babuda? I like saying that, so I hope that's his last name. I'm just going to read what he has about gratitude because it's great stuff. Comes from a post on his website called Living a Life of Gratitude Can Make You Happy. I'm going to quote and paraphrase, but I won't delineate. First thing he starts off with is a prayer from Meister Eckhart. If the only prayer you said in your whole life was thank you, it would suffice. Many days, this is Leo talking, or Mr. Babuda. Many days I try to humble myself and hold a 2-minute gratitude session. I simply sit or kneel with no distractions, close my eyes, and think about what I'm grateful for and who I'm grateful for. I don't do it every day, but let me tell you, on the days I do it, it makes me very happy. And I don't know why my inner cynic, something about the way he talk, I mean, when I heard him talk, I don't know what it is that my inner cynic seems calm. I'm not like this guy's full of BS. Maybe because it doesn't seem like, I don't know. Let me be grateful that my inner critic has taken the night off. Okay, let's just keep going. Why should that be, Leo asks. Why should the simple act of thinking about who and what I'm grateful for make such a big difference in my life? Just a few reasons. It reminds you of the positive things in your life. It makes you happy about the people in your life. Whether they're loved ones or just a stranger you met who was kind to you in some way. Because it turns bad things into good things. Having problems at work? Be grateful you have work. Be grateful you have challenges and that life isn't boring. Be grateful you can learn from these challenges. Be thankful they make you a stronger person. Because it reminds you of what's important. It's hard to complain about the little things. When you give thanks that your children are alive and healthy, it's hard to get stressed over paying bills when you are grateful there's a roof over your head. Because it reminds you to thank others. I'll talk more about this in a minute. Leo saying this, but the simple act of saying thank you to someone can make a big difference in that person's life. Calling them, emailing them, stopping by to say thank you. Just take a minute out of your life and tell them why you're grateful. Why you're grateful. Why you are grateful toward them is important to them. People like being appreciated for who they are and what they do. It costs you little, but it makes someone happy, and making someone happy will make you happy. What do I give thanks for privately in my little gratitude session? It varies every day. I thank the readers of this site for encouragement they have given me, for donations you've made that make me much closer to realizing my dreams, for the criticism you've given me to make this site better, for the time you've given me, for just reading the articles when you have the chance. I think of my loved ones. I thank my loved ones for all they do to me. I thank the strangers for the little acts of kindness. I thank God for the life he's given me. I thank people around the world for the things they've done to make the world better. I thank myself for the things I've done. It's important to recognize your own accomplishments. How to live a life of gratitude. The thing is, simple acts of gratitude don't cost you much. Bron. Especially ones... Well, actually, there was gratitude in there between the two of them. And also an appreciation for who they really were. So maybe I should just stick to Leo. Especially once you get over the initial discomfort some people feel with thanking others. But they can make a huge difference. If you're interested in a life of gratitude, here are his suggestions. Morning gratitude session. Take 2 or 3 minutes each morning to give thanks to whoever or whatever you're grateful for. You don't have to do anything other than close your eyes and silently give thanks. This one act makes a huge difference. Say thank you. When someone does something nice for you, however small, try to remember to say thank you and really mean it. Call to say thanks. Sometimes you might think about something nice someone did for you. Perhaps you remember it during your gratitude session. When you do, pick up the phone and call that person just to say thanks. Let them know what they did, you're grateful for, and why you appreciate it. Take a minute or two. If it's too early to call, make a note to call later. Even better is telling them in person if you happen to see them or they're on your route. Almost as good as a thank you email. Short and sweet. Give thanks for negative, in quotes, things in your life. There are always two ways to look at something. Many times we think of the negative, stressful, harmful, sad, unfortunate, difficult. That same thing can be looked at in a more positive way. Giving thanks for those things is a great way to remind yourself that there is good in just about everything. Problems can be seen as opportunities to grow, to be creative. See the prayer below for more on this. Learn a gratitude prayer. There are many prayers, religious or not, that can remind you to be grateful. Find one you like, print it out. Make it your desktop wallpaper. Here's a religious one. Here's a collection from a multitude of religions. You can find many others on the internet or write your own. If you're not religious, make one that doesn't include the concept of God. A good one is below. He's going to leave us with his gratitude prayer that he's always found. Well, perfect. Be thankful. Be thankful that you don't already have everything you desire. If you did, what would there be to look forward to? Be thankful when you don't know something, for it gives you the opportunity to learn. Be thankful for the difficult times. During those times, you grow. Be thankful for your limitations, because they give you opportunities for improvement. Be thankful for each new challenge, because it will build strength and character. Be thankful for your mistakes. They will teach you valuable lessons. Be thankful when you're tired and weary, because it means you've made a difference. It's easy to be thankful for the good things, a life full of a life of rich fulfillment comes to those who are also thankful for the setbacks. Gratitude can turn a negative into a positive. Find a way to be thankful for your troubles, and they can become your blessings. Author unknown. Thank you. I'm thankful, honestly. Leo Babuda just came across that. Thankful for Bron for bringing up gratitude. And, yeah, it's like this website Zen Habits that Leo has, or Leo Babuda, Mr. Babuda. It's been on my to-do list for ages, so. I know, I'm thankful for all you that listen, those you I hear from and those you I don't. And I can feel, I mean, I'm not even making this up, I can feel it. Because the depths of despair you can be in when you can't sleep. And believe me, I never met Dr. Demento, and I barely like hugging people. But I mean, I might give that guy a hug if I ever run into him. If he's, I'm pretty sure he's still alive. And Leo Babuda, we're not on a hug level yet, but thank you for this post and for doing what you do. And, you know, let's see as a community what we think about gratitude, if you guys want to talk about it or not. Okay, let's move on, though, to something more Westerosi. Next thing we're going to talk about real quick is Dario Naharis coming in through the Khaleesi's window. And the guy's got, I think he's got game. Now, again, I got nothing against this Noah Wiley-looking actor. I'm sorry, sir. But I liked my Dario Naharis, the other guy, just because he was way more, maybe because he was so over the top. But at the same time, I was contemplating it this week, and I was like, okay, this makes more sense, the new actor. And I'm a jerk for not knowing either one of your names, and I apologize in all honesty, because you both should be very proud of what you're doing and your accomplishments. And I'm a nobody, and I haven't put in the work that you guys do. So take that from what I'm saying. But I can see why they did a good job in recasting this guy, because he's smooth and whatever the women like Khaleesi like. But he's also more believable. I wouldn't have believed that. It would have kind of, the guy was so over the top last season. Yeah, if the Khaleesi was sleeping with him, I don't know. I wouldn't have. Oof. But anyway, this guy rolls in through the Khaleesi's window. Next thing you know, he's buck naked, and then he's doing the walk of shame. But it made me think of the Beatles. Made me think of the Beatles song, Came In Through the Bedroom Window. And so let's go over the lyrics and a little bit of the history. She came in through, I won't sing it because that's a, what, because I can't make it, I mean, I don't think I have any, like, joke versions of it ready to go. But the song goes, give me a second here. She came in through the bedroom window, protected by a silver spoon. But now she sucks her thumbs and wanders by the banks of her own lagoon. Again, I don't know. I like the Beatles. I don't know. I know only general non-fact impressions about them. But is this like a play on, is it about cocaine, the silver spoon? Or is it because she is a wealthy young lady? I don't know. Sucks her thumbs and wanders. Is she like a Trustafarian? That wasn't a term around when the Beatles were around. Didn't anybody tell her? Didn't anybody see? Sunday's on the phone to Monday. Tuesday's on the phone to me. Oh yeah, I think they say. She said she'd always been a dancer. She worked 35 clubs a day, 15 clubs a day. And though she thought I knew the answer, well, I knew what I could not say. So I quit the police department. Got myself a steady job, and though she tried her best to help me, she could steal, but she could not rob. Didn't anybody tell her, didn't anybody say, Sunday's on the phone, my name, oh yeah. And that was written by Paul and John, Lennon McCartney. And I don't know what it means, but of course I looked it up on good old Wikipedia. And there's two versions of what happened. According to the first version, Paul McCartney said the song was inspired by Apple Scruffs, which were, what do they call them, like groupies, dedicated fans who hung around outside the Abbey Road studio in the homes of the Beatles. And they broke into into Paul's St. John Wood home. Jessica Samuels, one of the groupies, says, "We were bored. He was out, so we decided to pay him a visit. We found a ladder in his garden." I mean, what's Paul McCartney's got a ladder in his garden? Maybe, I mean. Stuck it up to his bathroom window. Have I been saying bedroom window? Probably. And she said she was the one that climbed in, and they, like, were wearing his trousers and stole some stuff. And Margot Bird, another Apple scruff, who used to walk Paul's dog and also worked at Apple Corps, says it was on her to steal some photograph, which she did. Now, according to Mike Pinder of the Moody Blues, he says the inspiration for the song actually happened at them. Groupie climbed through his bathroom window, spent the night with Ray Thomas. The next day, Pinder and Thomas were hanging out with Paul McCartney, who started making the song up right there with his guitar in his hand. She came in through the bedroom window. 76, the Bee Gees covered the song. And I know, what's that guy from the Eagles, I think, covered the song? Joe Crocker or something? Joe Walsh? Freaking, I'm a bevy of non-knowledge. Rhythm Track was recorded by the Beatles for this in polythene pan. It's one piece, 25th of July, 69. After take 39, they added some lead vocals. This gives you an idea of, like, I guess I wish I knew more about the Beatles. So I could say they had 39 takes, then they added lead vocals, re-recorded the drums. Then 3 days later, July 28th, they added more vocals, guitar, percussion, pianos. The song was completed 2 days later with additional guitar and percussion. She came in through the bathroom window, segues abruptly after polythene Pam. The song preceding it without pause. The very beginning of the song, anticipation of the change of tempo, John Lennon says, "Well, listen to that, Mal," referring to Mal Evans, and then, and then shouts, "Oh, look out." Okay. A slower, more ethereal version of the song was recorded during the Let It Be sessions. Oh, yeah, it was Joe Cocker. Los Lonely Boys did a cover, Ray Stevens, Beatallica. And, I mean, there's no doubt Beatles are brilliant, and that's another, I mean, wow, all that level layers. I mean, I can just do, knockoffs of, yeah. So, yeah, so they got that going for them. All right, let's move on. All right, so I want to talk about the Red Woman, because, you know, I have to apologize, because between all the nudity and the, kidnapping people and putting leeches on them and burning people at the stake and all this hardcore, I don't know, I can't think of the vocabulary word, but this religious fervor, we'll say. You know, I guess I've up until this episode, and now retrospectively looking back, I really need to reanalyze this Red Woman, because she is an excellent, excellent listener, and she has great people skills when dealing with Stannis's wife, the lunatic that didn't get thrown out of the moon door, but should. If you got room, Baelish, I mean, if you need to throw a nut job, another nut job out a window or whatever, moon door, take Stannis's wife, please. But the Red Woman, I mean, I'm thinking, like, wow, yeah, she really, I don't know. And just, again, another thing to love about Game of Thrones. Like, she has, they have this conversation. She's in the tub. And then she tries, you know, she asks her to get these potions. And then she makes this joke that the crazy lady doesn't get. Well, even the awkwardness of the joke, she's able to feel out the moment in a way where she, instead of being like, oh, you didn't get that joke because you're a nut job. She's like, oh, okay, well, you know, you're so, again, I'm not getting the, but she's like, you know, no, because you're, someone once told me you can't kid a kidder, or what did they say? You can't fool an honest man. And I think that kind of was what she was saying to this woman, like, she's like, oh, because most jokes are lies, or all jokes are lies. And then she talks about how most of her potions are lies. And I don't even know if the lady could absorb that. But that was interesting to know. And she tries to put her at ease with her body. She, you know, it's only or the fact that she's sleeping with her husband or has slept with her husband and created a demon child. That doesn't seem to be a joke or a lie. But she says, only flesh, it needs what it needs. And then she says, you know, the woman's like, well, I don't think we should take my daughter with us on this trip because, you know, I'm one of those mothers with mother-daughter issues and a bevy of other issues with religion, intelligence, eating book soup, all that. But Red Woman puts her at ease. She says, a really textbook how to listen and how to deal with people. Oh, I understand your objection. Understand how you feel that way. She says, no, that would be impossible. You know, again, I need your daughter in my evil schemes. Yeah, she's probably going to turn, you know, something. I'm up to no good. I don't know, but it just made me think, like, this red woman would make an excellent shrink. I mean, she's good at it. She's very placid. She's got, what is that, skin like fine china. She's comfortable with her body. She oozes some sort of sensuality without being overpowering. And she's also she does feel very powerful, confident, and in command. All things that, I mean, I would be intimidated by her in a way that she'd be able to call me out on stuff and be like, okay, are you urinating in bottles again, Andrew? Oh, dear. Okay. Yes, Red Woman. Dr. Red Woman. Okay, Andrew. We need to be honest in here. I can't, you know. She'd have me, but she also, I mean, she'd need a little bit more of a caring and less, she'd have to have her clients. Well, I'd hope she'd either have to lie, you know, give me some kind of delusion that you have my best interests at heart, even if you're using me in an evil plan. You know, pretend you're helping me. Kind of like this podcast where I'm, you know, indoctrinating you into my army. But that's, like I said, that's not going to be for a while, so I'm helping you now. And later, you will be, you know, helping me take over things. Don't worry about it right now, though. I mean, if I could get the Red Woman helping me, she'd be good to have as your negotiator. But, I mean, I don't know. Just notice that I would be her client for sure. Otherwise, if Hannibal Lecter's not busy, take the Red Woman. You got your choice of shrinks that are gonna fuck you up if you screw with them. All right, let's see what else is left here tonight. Okay, so I'm gonna wrap it up with my nightly prayers, but I just want you to know that I'm going to see what kind of marinates or ferments in my mind about this Tyrion song when Bronn was like, oh, you know, I hope to hear that song. Because it was like, you know, if you beat the mountain, you know, there's going to be songs written about that. And Bronn says, yeah, I'd like to hear that song. Or I'd love to hear it. A touching moment. I mean, I think, well, maybe that Ralph Waldo Emerson poem, The Squirrel in the Mountain, might be it. But Let me see what comes up over the next week or two for that. Okay, I'm going to say my prayers now. Mother Crone, Sweet Crone, Miller, Smith, Tree Lord. I've been thinking about calling you Barky. Just because, I don't know. I think I like it. But let me know what you think of that. Just want to check in with you guys. Hopefully things are going good with those Jets for George R. R. Martin and the rest of the people involved in the HBO show. I'll probably be praying for them soon for stuff they want. Because, like I said, I don't even need to bring attention to myself and the good I do. Update on the goat situation. The goats are, I got some goats. So that's big news. I got them penned up. They're eating stuff. And you have to move goats a lot. That's kind of, so I hope you guys have been watching me because it's a lot of work. And luckily, the hound, I'm assuming it was you guys, the fake hound that I've been dealing with. He's got that foot problem, which I'm betting you guys know about. Crone would seem like one of your problems, some sort of foot thing. You can't walk. And he sent me out to, and I broke. I mean, that's it. He was at the inn. He said, somebody fetch some stuff because he can't walk. It's like an open sore. I don't know. So thank you. I didn't want to bring attention. I don't know if I should be humble or I should be begging and saying, but that's, I knew. So I went straight from there to get the goats. So I let my actions talk now. So yeah, I got goats. I'm getting more and more. Doing my best to get them on the arm or whatever, honestly, because I stole all the hound stuff. So if he catches me, I'll be toast, fake hound. But I know, I'm trusting in you guys. That's called faith that I've been talking about with you all. But listen, I have some prayers to ask, and it's not for me. It's going to sound like it's for me. But I was watching this last episode of the Game of Thrones. And they had the scene in the inn with Brianna Tarth and this guy, I think his name's Hot Pie, and then Podrick. Podrick's cool. Don't need to involve him. But I'm just worried about this Hot Pie because he can be really boring. And he was going on about the gravy and, the war, all sorts of Starks and all sorts of stuff. And he can really go on. So I'm just worried about him getting a podcast. And the thing is, I doubt he would pray at the end of every podcast to you, Crone, Smith, Miller, and Barky. Lord, sweet Lord Barky. Again, the tree god. I could call you that too, but you can let me know. He's big on gravy. Maybe you could burn his tongue with some gravy. That's awful. So that was one thing. And now I was thinking, since I'm asking you for something, I thought I'd give you God something. So Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky. I was thinking, so they had this Brianna Tarth. And I know, so I was telling you, I don't know if you guys have been watching me. But yeah, I do this podcast, make people fall asleep when I'm not goat herding right now. That's my full-time thing for you to, rise up with the goats. We'll take out this dragon for the goats. I've been telling the goats all about it. They seem totally interested. And I get, the good thing is, and I'm not bragging here, but I get along good with the animals, especially like your disrespected animals like goats. And their smell does not bother me. And like I said, I don't smell that great to begin with, so that's not going to be a problem. Plus, it's nice that I don't have to worry. Like, dealing with goats is way better than people. So that's a goat thing. But I wanted to make you guys, maybe put a smile on your face. So I was thinking this Brianna Tarth, she's quite a tough customer. And I'm not judging her either way. She's kind of, she seems like she just toes the line. She's big on keeping oaths, which I can respect. Hopefully the bad, you know, the fake hound crosses her path. But I was thinking it'd be funny if she had a podcast, put you to sleep. Because she'd probably be, oh, oh. She's always put out like that. Oh, I can't do a Brianna Tarth, but she'd be like, yeah, you know, okay, this is a, so I have to do a podcast to put them to sleep. I put them to sleep. You want me to put them to sleep? Go to sleep. Well, no, Brianna's like a Miss Tarth's Night Tarth. It's just to help them fall asleep, like help them gently fall asleep. It's ridiculous. Now, you might be saying to yourself that you don't sound like Brianna Tarth. Well, it's okay, gods. You know what I'm trying to get at. No, okay. Here's the podcast. Go to sleep, or I will make you go to sleep. I don't know, gods. I'm sorry. I thought it was funnier earlier. So I blew that. Please, I beg your forgiveness, Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky. Now, with the other gods, if you guys want new nicknames, I could give them to you, but I just don't have an official tree. Is just too general. Like, it's not like you're like a, I guess, face tree. Just sounds, I don't know, Barky. I like it. So if you don't, you know, go ahead and smote me, as I've said. Any gods don't like what I'm doing, smote away. But, you know, I'm down here. I wanted to make you laugh. I'm sorry I didn't, gods. But who else is trying? I mean, Smith, you got to probably deal with people hitting their thumbs or burning themselves, getting mad. Miller, what do you got to deal with? Like people losing their wheels and grinding stuff. It's boring. So boring. That's it. And then Crone, you just got probably people, well, he wouldn't believe this. He doesn't come visit me. And his mother, and he doesn't. He's I'm gonna go fight another battle. Go right ahead. Just let your mother die here alone. You know. So Crone, would you just please, you know, tell him to come love his mother? Why do they gotta be out there in the battling for the glory? What's the glory gonna do for him? You know, you gotta deal with that crap all day. Sorry about that, old gods and new gods and the old one. My prayer was interrupted by a band of like Irish Rovers or whatever you guys' version of Ireland is, and they were trying to, they're bothering the goats, and then they're making fun of me for living with the goats. And then they're asking me if I was Goat Boy from, you know, that worked for the fake hound. Then we all actually had a laugh about the fake hound and his bad foot. But so I kind of forgot where I was. I think I was talking about the goats, and this is going to be weird. But, you know, it wouldn't be a prayer if it wasn't weird. Crone, I want you to think hard about this. And I know you guys are working on Me and the Maiden, and I haven't heard any updates on that. But, you know, what I said, open heart, open mind, my spirit is yours type stuff. You know, I wasn't born yesterday. I was born at night, but not last night, you know. So maybe things aren't in the cards for Me and the Maiden. So, like I said, this is going to sound weird, but there's one goat that's really cool. I call her Tina the Goat. Just because I don't know, just hit me, Tina. And I was just thinking, and there's no way I would ever, I'm not into goats. But I was thinking, like, Tina would make it, like, a human. Like, you know, every once in a while they say gods come down and test. So I don't know if Tina's, like, the maiden. I'm not interested in the goat at all, okay? Just making that clear. So that the weird part is not that, but it's like, just let me know if, like, the Tina's, like, not a goat and she's going to turn into the maiden. Because I'm already being nice, but but and I'm not going to cross any weird lines. That's not what I meant by that. I should have never brought this up with you. Crone, I'm not that, well, you can see my fate, so you know. There was one time I went to a play, it was called, but it was about a goat and a man who were in love, and that was a real play, and it was a real drama, and it was good, and I really enjoyed it, and I think it was by, I want to say it was by, oof, I might have to look it up because I'm terrible at that stuff. Don't think it was a Ibsen play, Ibsen, but Sam Shepard, it could have been, I'm not sure, probably somebody I should know, but I'm sorry, but I think that was called, I don't know, something goat, but this isn't what, well, that's not that situation. I'm just saying if Tina was like a god in a body, or like if you could make her 100% not goat, 100% human, but she's just got a nice disposition. So that's all I'm saying. I mean, maybe this is my pitch that I'm so lonely talking to Tina. So again, maybe you should redouble your efforts on the maiden. I'm not telling you how to be gods. I'm just saying, you know, I'm like your consultant. I'm trying to make you like the gods. You know, once we brush this father, we got the warrior, the father, the mother, the maiden. I think there's one other dude. He has to do with death, so he's probably real busy anyway. And he'd probably be on our side, like we'll be usurping. We just make those gods lesser gods, like demigods. I mean, father and the mother, I mean, we got people on earth doing that. And I guess you could say you have old people and Smiths and Millers, and well, technically, you know, these frickin' septant thumpers are saying that Miller's not even a god. They don't know nothing, I'm telling you, Miller. And that I can't praise the old god and the new. We all know that's garbage. So, I don't know what my point was that. Yeah, forget my point. I'm just here to be Pentian or whatever. I'm prostrating. I'm into that now. And summary from last time we talked is that the goats, Project Goat, is in full back action. There's another, I try to make you laugh. That's another thing. How many of your earthly servants are doing that for you? Everybody always wants stuff from you. And they want to put you, now let me make one more pitch and then I'm taking up your guys' time, I know. Smith, Miller, Crone, who says that's how you have to be forever? If this is like an eternal God thing, again, I'm not sure I understand totally how you could be an old woman and be a God. But that's part of my pitch is like, what if, Smith, what if you wanted to be a busker? Or one of those Irish rovers I just ran into. They were all drunk. They seemed pretty jolly. Or Miller, what if you wanted to roll some cold steel, you know, instead of rolling oats or whatever the hell you got these people doing? Tree, Barky, you should probably stick to being a tree because I can't think a lot of, I mean, but the rest of you, Crone, what if you want to be the wisest? I mean, I don't know why you would get tired of being wise and wizened. But, you know, what if you wanted to be, outmaiden the maiden? Maybe you want to be a dude. I'm not holding that against you, Crone. Hopefully you are an old woman. I thought Crones were. But if you're an old dude, I'm totally toast anyway, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, I'm just saying if you guys want to get out of your roles, I'm down for that too. I mean, when we're working on this project together, it's teamwork, okay? I'm your earthly servant, gathering the goats. We'll take the dragon. Me and the goats, the goats aren't scared of the dragon, they're mad. So Project Dragon, then we'll work with the Khaleesi, break chains, be part of the Khaleesi's thing, Westeros. And, I hear about all this stuff going on at the wall and the others and White Walkers. Again, White Walkers are going to take out humans. They're going to be what? Last thing they're going to expect is an army of goats. So that's it. Not much else to say. I mean, I failed you by making you laugh, but I'm on the goats. And so hopefully the hound won't find me, a fake hound. Hopefully you keep his foot inflamed. Thank you for that. I'm thankful. I didn't really ask for any stuff. Again, like I said, refurbished boots or whatever. Perfectly with that fur trim. The green. They're sharp. So, but, you know, I'm just represented on Earth, however you want me to look. Again, Tina the Goat, forget I brought that up. That whole thing was a mistake. All right. It's your servant here on Earth, Crone, sweet Crone, Mother Crone, lovely Crone, Miller, all grains must be milled by you, Smith, every tool we use, I thank you for, and Barky, you're the best, man, trees, we need you, shade, air, apples, other type of tree-born stuff. I get barks, good for something, just like syrup out of you. Thank you. Okay, I'm showing some gratitude for all that you all do to me, for me. Amen. Or what? I don't know what they say. Valar, Valar Morghulis. The night is dark. No, I don't want to say that. All men must know. Well, yeah. Valor, yeah, good night.